As a live donor recipient, I'm profoundly grateful to the many people who have supported me along the way. None more so than my live donor, Sarah Puzzell. Sarah recognised the seriousness of my circumstances and the trajectory my health was taking. In an act of extraordinary courage and selflessness, she chose to put herself at risk to save my life, giving a part of herself so that I could continue mine. I will forever be grateful for her bravery, generosity, and unwavering resolve to help another human being live. Throughout this journey, I've been surrounded by friends and family who have offered support in countless ways, some even volunteering to become live donors themselves. While some were willing but unable to proceed, others understandably found the weight of live donation overwhelming. I'm deeply thankful to every single person who stood beside me, and I respect each individual's decision made along the way. I'd also like to thank the incredible team at QKTS, the Queensland Kidney Transplant Service at the Princess Alexandra Hospital, who guided me through the many twists and turns of the transplant process. Their compassion, professionalism, and reassurance during moments of uncertainty made an enormous difference. I want to make special mention of Julie, whose empathy and kindness were present in every interaction. My heartfelt thanks goes out to my nephrologist, Dr. Stacey O'Shea, who has supported my health journey over many years and will continue to do so for many more. Her expertise, calm guidance, and unwavering care helped me navigate significant changes in my health with dignity and confidence. I'm incredibly grateful for her support. I must also acknowledge my surgical team, led by Dr. Vijay Kanagahaja. Their precision and expertise resulted in what can only be described as a textbook recovery. Dr. Vijay modestly referred to himself as just the plumber after my surgery, but the ongoing care, reassurance, and presence of him and his team during those early days of recovery meant more than I can express. Living with chronic disease brings real challenges, especially when balancing health with work. The flexibility and understanding showed by my employer, TIS, has allowed me to remain engaged, focused, and purposeful throughout my journey. I'd like to give special thanks to Jason Lyle, Mark Ruff, and Ryan Kirkwood for their unwavering support during this time. Finally, a big thanks to the Why Work podcast team for inviting me to be a special guest. I've loved the experience of being able to share my story on this platform. Thank you.
We spread like a new disease. You want a war, but the same TV. We come in by force entry. The mugs from Backwater Brisbane.
Hello, and welcome to the Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trej Svetkovsky, and Sarah Puzzell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
So here I am in hospital, and I am, when you're in hospital, it doesn't matter what background you have, you're just you, right? And you're vulnerable. You're extremely vulnerable. But I can't help myself, Trej.
I can't help myself.
And I want to let it go. I keep wanting to let it go. But then I had the most, and I don't think it's, I've written long letters that have now gone to executive health boards, to the patient feedback. I've sent it now to the Minister of Health and the Shadow Minister of Health, Ombudsman, anyone who might have any interest whatsoever in how we fare in a public health system. I've shared my case study now in detail with a couple of key clients who are in healthcare management and influence this, and I've also sent this to human factors teams with the Human Factors and Ergonomic Society of Australia to use as case studies freely, willingly, of how not to operate and areas for improvement. And I focused on the stuff that went well. I always focus on stuff that went well. I went through a whole litany of experiences that were made it a very confronting and dehumanizing experience. And if I just summarize one sentence that I've written, essentially is here, my overall hospital experience felt fractured and dehumanizing. It was in stark contrast to what's promised and promoted in any of your professional practice model that they advertise in public elevators and hallways. And I gave the feedback earnestly to try and help improve the system. And I have worked in fantastic systems. I have seen and studied how things work well. And Australia boasts some amazing people like salutogenic architects who design for health experience and psychological safety and well-being. Australia has top-tier, you know, world-class designers who obviously were not consulted in this instance. We have human factors specialists who can manage the user experience studies with Queensland University of Technology research teams. And in their infinite wisdom, there used to be a program with Queensland University of Technology, who still does some research with this, but a coordinating team in the public health system in Queensland, award-winning, Australian Design, Good Design Award winning. And the next year after that, in their infinite wisdom, Queensland Health, or whoever makes the decision, cut the program.
And I was a recipient
of poor design, poor system design. I don't blame individuals when a system creates burnout among individuals. But yeah. I had such a bad... Even the airport design, just structurally, is designed for, like, it looks like an airport. So you know how we talked about this amazing thing of airport design being big and...
Huge volumes of people.
You start out in a large open space, and then you continue to get through the check-in, and you go through the transit lines, and you congregate, and there's decisions that you must make, and everybody's in line, and then you go to the next checkpoint, check-in, your baggage claim, then you go through your security, and as you get closer and closer to your gate and to get into an airplane, the design funnels and becomes more narrow.
It's conditioning you.
Conditioning you psychologically to get into this tiny space, right?
Yes.
So that's part of the reasoning behind large airport design.
Spent a lot of time in airports.
You can picture this.
But I'm gonna flip all this based on the premise that, notwithstanding all the utopian ideal, what is a perfect hospital? There's one fundamental fly in the ointment to challenge your premise, Sarah, and that is most people, in fact, excluding the maternity ward, most people who, for example, CJ would fall in, they go to a hospital because they are fundamentally sick and fractured. You consented as an absolutely healthy specimen to enter that milieu of chaos. Now, I assure you, a person who is about to die, the last thing on their mind is going to be a good work design because of the chaos in which they're going in. So sick people will go in. But what I'm saying is you've come in as a very fit person.
My perspective could be different, right?
Yeah, and I think I'd challenge it because it's sick people go to hospitals.
Yes, okay.
If they come out healthy, like CJ has, it's a win.
All right, so hang on that thought and come with me along for this ride, and then I want to hear your perspective afterward, all right? So let's go for this ride. So I'm still vulnerable walking in to donate my kidney. At that point, the night before I go in, I have to wash my body with this special infection control stuff twice, and I smell like I'm formaldehyde dead body. I'm not kidding, right? I have to shave and I have to... I smell like a dead body walking in, right? It's dehumanizing there. I'm a specimen now.
Yeah.
And my entire experience felt like, not from all the people, the standout individuals, but a good person will fail in a bad system every time. Isn't that a William Deming quote, right? So I felt like I was a specimen whose kidney was harvested, thank you very much, out the door, right? Boom, gotcha. There was no real patient experience maintaining dignity. Mind you, I've noticed competition between wards. I could feel the difference. It was palpable. So CJ's ward was much more caring and supportive, bar my overnight nurse, Joe, standout. But I hear your point. But I'm just going, it's just, if we looked at nothing else but just environmental design, then one of the most basic, we talk about the care model, the create, the long enduring, you have a good environment, you can benefit from that for 20 or 30 years, how long that environment exists. You have a bad environment, you've got workarounds for 20 or 30 years. So you're vulnerable. You actually, we're going to agree about something, Trej, and I love this, right? We often do. We're going to agree that people might be sick and vulnerable and their family members might be quite stressed trying to figure out how to find people, etc. So your airports, if we go back to that airport example, deal with like this relatively healthy population, high volume, they're in a hurry, but they actually know what to expect. There's some predictable linear journeys about what they're about to travel on. And then you look at a hospital population who are sick and vulnerable and stressed and cognitively disoriented through that level of stress. It's a non-linear journey. They don't know, are they going to diagnosis? Do they have to go to pathology? Yep. They don't understand if they're going, you know, what the system is for them. Each journey is a little different. Mm. So we don't have a similar journey or pathway to travel. So if you've walked into this big open space, you've got visual stimuli and cognitive overload before you even begin. The wayfinding, which is a specialty in architectural design, is lost on you. Because you don't really understand, you need nurturing, support, comfort, right? Because you're vulnerable, right? Not just somebody who's walking in will that just wants their latte, coffee, and you know, biophilic waterfall design. I'm not talking about that just for aesthetics, for the sake of it. But you know, our airports move crowds around efficiently, and hospitals have to care for individuals, their safety, their psychological well-being. They don't want bottlenecks, they don't want infection risk or clinical delays, and every extra step you have to take while you're figuring things out can add stress or fatigue, right? So just clinically and bump you into people you didn't want to go into, that's a problem, right? Even when you're healthy and vulnerable. So you can't use the same logic. And airports like, you know, a big terminal, whereas when you're in hospital, you want to feel more like supportive family neighborhood, short, very easy to access corridors, and clear separation of workflows. You need to understand that you might have to be rerouted, and you don't want chaos in that process, right? And all your systems have to fail safely. You want dignity. You want some safety. You want to feel calm, protective. You want to feel some sense of health. I ended up telling the hospital in my feedback form that I felt that being in a public hospital, if this was representative of a public hospital in Australia, being in that space felt like a survivalist camp, an environment of survival, not health, not healthcare. And I have worked healthcare. I have managed outpatient surgical centers where infection control was paramount. We have 5-6 hours of cleaning every single night. I've done audits on healthcare systems. I've been an executive director of community healthcare. I have been a clinician. I've been an occupational therapist. I've been a very good case manager in the past. And I just find that is so fragmented and disjointed. I am devastated at what's happening in Australia, let alone the food was absolute mush rubbish. Oh my gosh. So the wretches. So I did have a spectacular recovery, and I made the mistake of getting up and showering myself and dressing myself on day two. Long story short, I even surprised the registrar. I ended up being discharged. And it was an incredibly horrible, messy discharge with miscommunication, right? And I was in tears at the end of it. And I had to go upstairs, downstairs with misinformation. But by the afternoon, I'd gone back to the apartment. Nobody had really assessed how I was going to be cared for. I was managing by myself. And I walked back to the hospital to check on CJ, whose recovery is much more extensive than mine when you receive a kidney, and he's on all kinds of drugs for immunosuppressants and pain relief. And I had Thai takeaway, didn't I? I couldn't walk very fast. I was a shuffle. I was like a ski shuffle, snowshoe shuffle back to the hospital. And the registrar, who's responsible for so the surgery, the surgical flows, he was walking out to finish his day, conclude his day, and he'd seen me as I was going into surgery, and he'd seen me at discharge, right? And I'm shuffling back, carrying my bag of Thai takeaway, and I'm dressed, and he looks at me, he's like, wait, what? He just shook his head, like, what? Because I think I might have hit a milestone or broken some benchmarks for my post-operative recovery. But it was not without trauma. I was traumatized with how poorly my discharge plan was handled. And I'm just going to offer, we can talk, if you have any questions, I can deliberate. I can tell you all about it. I've shared the reports with you. If anybody listening to this podcast wants to read my experience, I will send them my feedback form, because I want people to learn from this. I have no shame in sharing some very, you know, my healthcare details if it actually helps you learn. I mean, the high level summary, the administration technology software didn't, there was no architectural integration. We've talked about human readiness levels. Obviously, none of that was done. The staff were absolutely surprised at opening their computer and having a new form to fill out that they'd not been trained in. They had information I had to repeat multiple times. They asked about whether or not I had bed sores, because it was showing up on my software. I'm like, no, I've never had a bed sore in my life. Are you kidding me? A wound? Are you what? And then there were things like, you know, the meal orders wrong, not from the guy who took our order. That was done in the behind the scenes. There was like, okay, little things you can live with and all the time, but they just keep accumulating. A friend of mine who was in there had a tray of hot water. She just donated her kidney to her husband, spilled across her belly. Her hot tea, okay, on her wound that she had to self-manage because they were about to do the wrong treatment and get ice. And she's like, no, you need running water on this. No, let me take care of this. So, and I don't blame the person for accidentally dropping the tray, but the geometry, the logistics, no one did a task analysis and a scenario analysis and properly worked out how the bed configures with the tray, with the plugs, with everything else in the room, how that sets. Your tray was just dumped on the bedside table without realizing if you could access it, right? I wouldn't have complained about any of this if my discharge hadn't been so poorly managed, so traumatic, that I was pretty much told, suck it up, princess, and not those exact words. It was like, make a decision. You either go down to the transit lounge, which looks like a 1970s railway station, for 5 hours until you can get someone to pick you up, or you carry your bags if you want to go visit CJ yourself. I said, but that's contraindicated medically. And I was told, not our problem. Once you're discharged, you're not a legal liability.
Right.
And it went on and on with a lot more detail, right? And I ended up going downstairs, upstairs, downstairs, upstairs. When an orderly was called, I was actually originally told by the doctors that you did not have to discharge that day or that early, and I had time to wait, but it all changed as soon as they left the room,
yes,
right? So when I was about to go back to bed, I'd made the mistake of getting up early to shower myself because no one offered me a shower or a bed bath the day before.
Yes.
So I did it myself the next day.
Yeah.
So when after all of this happened, you're seeing this picture, right? The orderly says to me, they called an orderly to carry my bags down to this transit lounge, which I just asked, can I drop my stuff and come back up, right? That caused a big challenge because that's against the tick the box. I kept challenging the way they tick the box. I tend, Trish, to challenge how people tick boxes, right? But there's no patient experience. It's just not on our shift, not on our hands. The orderly says to me, oh, okay, get in the chair. I said, well, no, if I'm asked to leave prematurely, I will at least have the dignity of walking out. But I do walk slow. You can put my bag in the chair if you need to have the wheelchair. And she looked at me. She said, well, if you're walking slow, why won't you just get in the chair? I said, because I want some dignity. I'm not ready to leave. I was going to go back to bed and rest. I want some dignity.
Mm.
And she said, well, I've got jobs to do.
Yeah.
That blunt. And I said, well, I see I'm a job to do, but I'm telling you now, go ahead and take my bag without me. Leave it in the transit lounge. I'll shuffle slowly myself. She said, we're not allowed to. I said, well, there's a dilemma, isn't it? I will not get in the chair. You cannot force me. You've told me I'm fine to discharge everybody, so let me discharge. You don't know what happens when I walk out this door, who's looking after me, or how I'm going to get around. You have no fathom clue. right? I didn't even have Panadol. And there's no pharmacy, no public pharmacy even there. I didn't even know where to get Panadol from. I was like, I'm not from here. I was like, big crocodile tears. I don't want to think properly right now. I just want to...
I think the discharge process is a little broken because
It
doesn't appear that the nurses on ward are fully across the process. In other words, they can't rely on the other departments that are involved. So a wardie has to come along and, you know, escort you downstairs and make sure you exit safely. They can't book a time with those people. So if they ring up, the person could turn up in 3 minutes or 45 minutes. So when my discharge came along, no one sat me down and said, right, you're discharging today. This is the process. You know, what time would you like to leave? You know, do you want to have a shower before you go? This, that, and the other. I said, look, you know, 2 o'clock. My friends are coming at, 11:45. My friend will be here. I've made arrangements for him to collect me. So I'll have a shower and, you know, do all this. Oh, yeah, sure. 3 minutes later, a wardie turns up and is quite disgruntled that I'm not ready to leave.
Yeah.
Well, what, you don't want to go downstairs? I said, I do eventually, but at 11:45, this is, oh, well, you can't book a time. So the nurse wasn't aware. She didn't explain it to me, and the wardie's turned up, and he's pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no process that they follow. What should have happened was, hey, wardie, can we get a get Clinton downstairs at 11:45?
It's quite surprising, isn't it? It wouldn't have, the whole process of walking you out wouldn't have taken very long.
Everyone works in their own band.
Yeah.
So there's these bands are stacked on top of each other to build the process of, let's call it, discharge. So seen by the surgeon, seen by the physio, nurses do their little bit, get the paperwork ready, wardies are going to take you downstairs and you're discharged. But no one's coordinating that. There's no command and control over that process.
Mm.
It's just each individual layer has to behave with some recognition of the other. So without even telling me, the nurse left my room and called her after we'd agreed till 11:45, and she said, that's fine. She called the warden straight away.
Yes.
Knowing that it normally takes 45 minutes. Well, it didn't. It took 3. So now we've got this conflict between the patient and this other band in the process.
Yeah.
And they're not talking to each other.
You might think, oh, look, we know hospital beds are in demand, blah, 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 oh, they need one. But I heard them say that my room... No one was coming into my bed till the afternoon, right?
Yes.
So I just needed a few more hours because I had a friend. I had to buy an extra hotel room night, which was not inexpensive in Brisbane right now, with the cricket on, no less. I had to find a friend who just happened to be visiting Brisbane to try and collect me, who wasn't available for 5 hours later, right? You know, et cetera. And the fact that in Ward 4B, the ward that was really operating effectively with compassion, et cetera, and CJ's ward, the next day when I was visiting, I heard a patient saying, oh, look, it's something about discharge. And they said, don't worry. It's okay. You're in no rush. We would never make you leave. I just heard, I was like, wait, what? So it was a sharp contrast. It was an inconsistent policy and practice, right? I actually had to call the nursing team back because nobody had walked me through the discharge instructions, the wound care, even my wound dressings. I didn't know where they were. They'd stuffed them in flowers. They'd never given them to me or given me instructions. They were stuffed in flowers that had been given to me as gifts that I'd already asked, said, well, I can't carry anything. Just take that down to CJ's ward, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody had really given, they ticked a box that probably left her dressings, but nobody, what do I do with them? How do I do this? Okay. The closing that I said on this, then Trish, I'm going to go back to your comments now after all I've shared, right? And my arguments about good hospital design. Closing to my letter is, look, this letter is not intended to undermine the hospital's life-saving work. Right? There's medical miracles happening. I'm deeply grateful for the medical miracle of kidney transplants, and I appreciate the skilled and compassionate individuals who did their best within a fractured system. I offer this feedback as someone who gave a literal part of myself to extend and improve my friend's life. Got my spare tire. What could have been a celebrated, shared, and transformative act became an ordeal of mismanagement, misalignment. It should not be that way, not for any future donor. The hospital system must do better. Donors should feel leaving celebrated, not discarded. They should feel supported, not administratively processed. Please honour the gift of life beyond surgery through better system design, staff empowerment, and patient-centred care. So, Trej, I was well walking in there electively, self-maiming, you know, self-mutilation, if you will call it, self-harm, grievous bodily harm, consenting. And at the same time, I still expected a little dignity. What say you?
Three words. Public hospital system. And you just have to be realistic and, unfortunately, not idealistic. Because
is this idealistic, these expectations?
It is.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
Of the cost.
No, stop it.
Is. It's a taxpayer-funded system, and you mentioned the amount of work that they put in. See, my point to this is there's no way moving on, like after all of this settles down, there's no way CJ, for example, would feel anything other than eternally grateful for the hospital system. So because it was their house in which this altruistic act was performed, not very long after this, you're going to wake up and go, yeah, the food was rubbish. And yeah, they discharged me at 12:45, should be 1:45, but oh my goodness.
Hello.
He got
Hello.
A gift. And that's the big picture. It is in the sense that you're modestly out of pocket given the gravity of the generosity of
Once you tick the box for private health, though, I know I get a bill every month for my private health plus.
Yeah. So do I. But I got no discount during this month.
There's going to be no extras. 254 patients, as you said before. This, because we live in a very neoliberal, very, very advanced capitalist mode, there is no money in altruism. You've got it yourself. There's no money. Look, let's get real about this. This is a very advanced capitalist system. If there's money to be made, I'm not asking to be paid.
I was talking about dignity.
No, trust me. If there was somehow a financial transaction, I don't know what the methodology is. If somehow it would work for a private sector, trust me, you guys would be doing high fives, you'd be getting gold standard service.
Let me frame it a different way then. I think where Sarah's at is there, her expectation is that they live up to what is on the brochure. So when you walk in, there's a marketing campaign about the level of care.
Yeah.
Care squared. It's the multiple of care, right?
Care squared.
So this is what they're promoting as their values
mantra.
And their objectives to you, the person who walks into
the
hospital.
They overpromise, but that's right. They've underdelivered.
So they set the expectation, and then they fall short of it. So if the expectation wasn't there, and we all went, you know what, we're very lucky to have this, and we're grateful, and we walk in with our heads down, and you know, expecting the worst. Well, that's different, right? We would have got better than what we expected.
But care squared, baby.
Care squared.
Yes.
So
that's a truism for just about everyone, isn't it?
Yes, but
it's better to under promise and over deliver.
How different
so
is that?
There's a department in that hospital that is striving to present to you, the person walking in, whether you're sick or well, that you are here, you are safe, we're going to look after you, to the absolute maximum.
But how is that any different to work as imagined as opposed to work that's being done?
I think some places you can go to and you are blown away by the service you're provided.
Correct.
Airlines is an example.
Yeah, or you go to hotel, booking.com, and you get there and you think, oh my God, this is the foyer looks fine, and you get inside the room and it's this crappy room. I took
a photo of their nursing services professional practice model, which was posted everywhere, and I used this in my letter. You know I'm a little crafty like that, right? So it's a page out of your book, Trej. So you can't even tell me that. It's a page out of the prosecuting attorney's page here. I took a page. I took photos of their mantras that say center, person-centered care. It's caring, compassionate, respectful, with integrity, professionalism, accountability, and leadership. Care delivery, development recognition, shared governance. See if I can read all that. Can't read that word right now. Quality and safety. Oh, and teamwork. One time, I shuffled down the hallway and carried two things down to CJ's room. And I was tired, like day one after surgery. And I asked the team, I said, oh, I've got something else to send down to CJ's room. Do you mind to drop this down? Didn't even take a moment to think about it. Looked at me, glared, and went, that's all the way down the hallway. And I said, yeah. I've shuffled down there twice. All right, I'll shuffle again. I just need to rest then if you don't wish to do it. Or maybe you could just take it halfway to the nurse's station and ask them to carry it to his room. And the graduate nurse looked at me, looked at the training nurse, stayed quiet, came back to my room, grabbed it, took it to the nurse's station for me.
All right, four words.
K squared.
Four words. Yeah, this little square.
Can you square care?
Yeah.
Please
look four words. And look, and it's going to be pretty hard for you to argue with any of these elements. Public hospital life saving. And from what I can see here, that is a completion of all those elements.
Mission completed.
Yes. Mission completed. So long after the mushy
food. Are you telling me to shut the F up?
No. This is clearly part of your process and your problem. This
my
is going to be.
My process. Wait. Alan.
Seriously.
No, wait. I'm interrupting here.
Okay.
Alan. He's the little agitator.
I'm trying to speed up the process for you. Because, look, at the end of the day, look, I think it's a huge, huge win.
Because
a huge
look,
win.
Nothing will improve for me. My experience is done.
Yeah.
Status post tense. But if I can't have this level of training and skill and knowledge. I wrote a book on healthcare insights. If you remember, the book has patient insights, and respectfully, it has voices from the practitioner to talk about their real world constraints in difficult systems. And the third section of this book is from specialist experts who know about system improvement and design, including salutogenic architecture that I mentioned. So I have this very holistic, rounded view, and I've been a patient, I've been a clinical provider and an educator and a researcher in healthcare research, and I have also been the system improvement designer, user experience, human factors. So I have a perspective from all three. And if I didn't take that knowledge, that skill, that experience to try and feed back and offer some advice on how to improve the system, which I believe I did in a balanced way, but spoke about my specific experiences so it had context, gave them recommendations and resources, and in fact, I gave them a list of about 6 episodes from the Why Work podcast that pertained to psychological safety, psychosocial systems, and healthcare case law, which afterward, our podcast bumped up again into Australia's top 40 business management podcast for Apple Podcasts. So I've shared this for learnings. My experience does not change.
No.
But if I help in any way, voluntarily, spent days writing this damn feedback letter, if the next person's experience is just a fraction more graceful with a little more dignity, I feel I've helped. So yeah, if it wakes them up to look at that.
I agree with Trace, though. Like, overall, the disappointment of our experience will fade, and the miracle of what was created in that experience will override any...
You know, I might write another book out of it. Guys,
yeah,
you don't know
another
how
book.
I work
look, the experience,
with your spare time.
like the experience. That's right. So the experience, clearly, like the way from what you've explained, and we'll end it because that's probably the longest... Oh, we've gone past an hour. We'll have to chop this one up. The experience is... So what I would call that, it's an effective thing. So I cannot understand your experience because it's so personal and it's effective. Effective with an A.
I can celebrate
you.
The good, but I can also recognize the dire need to improve healthcare experiences for others, right? They can't change my experience now. It's done. It's a story.
Correct.
It's just
it's
a story now.
Look, it was a world-class procedure.
So that tells me, please, Australia, put some funds into specialty organ transfer types of facilities.
If there was a way the private sector could make money out of this, they will. Your experience will be resolved.
Yeah.
I think also one person that I should acknowledge is Vijay, my surgeon. He was incredible. His
there,
bedside
that's right.
Ran up.
These are and so what
can
you've
you
got
scare,
is
can you square care?
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's it. But the bottom line is, aren't you? So, putting the checkout time and carrying bags and the mushy food aside,
the discharge drama and heartbreak and tears.
Yeah, putting all the drama of the discharge. Aren't you both so grateful and blessed that you are both here talking now and touch keyboard? That there are, well, there's certainly no immediate complications because you are right here now in the flesh bringing pastries
and
croissants. Yep. A textbook recovery. When I put that in, so I'm
I've thanked all those people who I believe are the experts working in a very compromised system.
Yeah, but
I think their job's hard.
And I can't help but wonder, given CJ explaining the time sensitive issue, it's kind of such a big win that all of this will pass. All of this will fade.
Can I just.
Just so you know,
you could say no.
You can't give away your second
kidney. No,
that's right. That's right.
Boys, should you have kidney failure? I have no more to give. Yeah, everybody give one closing statement.
Just a closing statement. 2 points. One, the hospital seeks feedback.
Yeah.
And we have a saying in my industry that you accept the standard you walk past.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it.
That's good.
Just out of interest. Yeah. There's obviously no competition within this state.
I wish there were.
One hospital.
Yes.
But what about at a national level? I have no idea.
There's about to be a second. They're setting up a transplant clinic in Townsville.
Wow. Okay,
yeah, it's been set up. They're just.
But what if you looked at Sydney or Victoria or?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure there would be a friendly rivalry, I would think. But I know that some of the
I just wonder whether there's any private hospitals that offer the same service.
Well, I know that the only fatalities, though, I think, haven't they been New South Wales related to donors?
Very early days. Early days, yeah. Cool. I think they had one person go into... I think they lost. Brain damage.
That's
as a result
right.
of a bleed that couldn't be controlled. So it was a tragic.
So how far would you go for a friend, Alan?
Well, now
I'm too much of a chicken. I'd probably not be able to.
At least you know it though.
Yeah. Don't discount what you're capable of. I think when you're in that situation, if you had a loved one in your family who you realise you were the only source of their health.
Yes.
Don't be surprised at the courage you might find.
I can honestly say I never ever thought I'd be confronted with this decision. I didn't even know it was a thing.
I think it's easy to think courageous thoughts, but it's hard to do
things. It is. And I realise that to be courageous doesn't mean it's popular, and that's part of the courage that's required.
I hope we get an opportunity to talk about that. I think we touched on some of the discomfort that our friends and family felt the assumption that there might have been an expectation that they put their hand up. Some friends put their hand up early and then that
awkward.
That never happened again. I hope we get the opportunity to talk about it because that's a fascinating discovery.
A lot of people get screened out really early. So another friend reached out and then they got screened out in the first phone call.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so with healthcare issues.
It does.
Your closing statement, Trej, be balanced or I'll buy.
I'll probably be closely aligned to Alan in that, for me, I see it like through that lens of risk. Obviously, there are certain people, immediate family. For me, I just would, provided I'm obviously compatible. But I'd be a little bit more measured. But there are also a lot of, which we won't go into detail, I've got also a lot of, there's a lot of philosophical reasons. There's sort of philosophy.
I had my son assessed to make sure to screen to see whether or not he was, had any risk profile.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you did.
Because otherwise I would conservatively have to realise that, my kidney might need to go to my son. But he was not found to have any profile at this age and anything can happen.
Oh, okay.
I had him screened.
So you did.
I did.
So you're not compatible. So it was a compatibility.
No. It wasn't about compatibility. It was screened for if he had any risk factors for kidney disease.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, there you go. But again, these are conversations that, there are, and they're really,
Do you want to see my, I have a thank you gift, and it looks like a bean.
Oh.
Kidney bean.
A kidney bean thank you gift.
Not a Mexican jumping bean.
No, could be.
Very tacky.
Okay.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trej, Sarah, and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe. And we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases, and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.
Trej, I've just had a croissant, and that's how we started this podcast, over hot chocolate and croissants. But that gave me the fuel to think a little bit better.
Okay.
And we just left the discussion, talking all things kidney related, all things renal. So one thing I want to make sure I also thank all the amazing people like at the gym and some friends who really stood by my side, because we talked about some of the confronting aspects, but there are some phenomenal people, Tracy and Trev, and so many. There's a list of folks who've just been by my side, so special thanks to them. But I can't leave something alone. The sentiment that we ended on was something to the effect that you raised about, hey, no matter the trauma, the hospital experience, hey, deal with it, princess. It's a public hospital system. Mm. But look, when all is said and done, you're just going to be happy, and CJ will be happy, yep, but a life CJ. Is saved, right?
Oh, I didn't say you're going to be happy.
Okay. But essentially, it's fades. It's a story, right? But, you know, the sentiment is therefore that we've used the public health system, the public purse strings, to do this as an individual benefit. Let's go macro. You're so into that big, broad big social picture. Perspective. Yep. Can we just for a moment, I got to contest this, because from a social, economic perspective, which is not my expertise, but I like to think macro systems, there are massive productivity gains to Australia. Plus, we've also saved the life of an Indigenous man, right? So there's that social benefit. There's the diversity that it brings to Australia. And the productivity gains to Australia, there's higher likelihood. CJ is a young man, he's in his early 50s, he's productive in an executive or a senior management role in mining industry, higher likelihood of returning to work and increasing hours, and his workplace, I want to point out, Tease has been incredibly supportive of CJ. So he's, unlike the text I read you, the email I read you, he's had an incredibly supportive pathway through his workplace, and he's going to continue to work and increase hours, have fewer sick days or hospital admissions, improve cognitive function that he was talking about was impaired, and obviously physical function. So there's massive benefits to Australia. We circle back through this act of benevolence, if you will, and his ability to receive this kidney, better income tax that's paid, reduced reliance on any kind of benefits, far less productivity losses. His son gets the benefit of having a man around, so they're likely to be more productive as well. It lowers disability severity. He doesn't have a higher cost support pathway now in, you know, that would put a constraint on Australia. So there's a cost benefit to Australia to provide this, right? Chronic disease costs are compounding, and we've just been tackling that. Better use of national resources reduces demand on infrastructure, frees up more beds, more dialysis units. There's intergenerational economic benefits when you think of the trickle down for his sons, less interruptions to them, their work, their pathways, financial responsibilities, national resilience and ethical leadership is basically what we've added to. And I think that needs to be more case studies. We didn't get into it, but the whole point was that there are some countries who do this more regularly, more culturally accepted, and have very low dialysis rates, and through renal pathways, fewer demands on healthcare resources, because more people consciously, intentionally understand the benefits of life donation. So check out Donate Life, please. If there's ever a concern about, oh, we've taken from the public purse strings, we've actually given back more. There's I'm sure there's a cost benefit return on investment that far outweighs the resources that were consumed in this, and it would save hundreds and thousands of dollars over time. Just got to do that.
For me, it was just you're actually talking about your actual in real time hospital experience.
Yes.
Yeah, not the big macro level picture. This was just hospital.
But we were talking about the public health strings, the purse strings of funding the public health system. But in fact, we give back to the economy more than we take out through this too.
That's right.
That's all. I gotta have my Little Miss can't be wrong moment.
Well, fair enough. No, definitely not wrong. No. All right, I'll stop that.
Invite for stain tree, the mugs from Backwater Brizzy.